I'm just gonna start this.
Let's just run with it.
Yeah, we're gonna run with it, and I'm gonna welcome everybody who is joining us for this episode of the Co-Opticast. It's number 52. That would mark 2 years of you putting up with our horse shit. So I'd like to thank everybody on this wonderful Monday, October 4th, 2010. And since it is a special episode, I am not only joined by the internet's Nick Paleo, but by our esteemed staff members, Kat and Jim. And at least three of us have the sniffles right now, so forgive all the you might be hearing, because it's going to come at you from three different directions, perhaps. How is everybody? Nick, how are you doing?
Like you said, I've got the sniffles, but I'm hanging in there.
Yeah? Kat, yeah. You doing good?
Yep.
Jim?
Great.
Jim is doing fantastic, apparently.
I missed it.
Let's talk about what we've been playing, perhaps. Nick, why don't you start?
I've still been playing a ton of Halo Reach and enjoying it immensely. I'm still working through my solo legendary trek. I think I'm at
I'm so sorry.
I'm at like the halfway point. But it's pretty satisfying. It's not so bad. It's just every once in a while the game will throw, you know, the two hunters at you or five or six elites, and it gets pretty frustrating.
Yeah, definitely.
I've also been playing a ton of Civilization V. We were talking about this earlier, but my first 11-hour game ended in a loss at turn 500, and I am now, 100 turns into my second game. And even though I lost the first one, it was fun.
Excellent. It has that effect, right? You're just like, oh, if I just change one thing about the way I'm playing, I could certainly win next time.
Yeah.
Oh, Gandhi nuked me again. Damn it.
Yeah, that Gandhi's a bastard.
Yes. You know what, one thing? I haven't played Civ 5 yet, but I'm disappointed that they give you George Washington Lincoln.
Yeah, I liked Lincoln better, but...
The stovepipe hat just does it for me, I guess.
I've also been playing Quantum Theory.
How horrible is that? Because it looks horrible.
It's pretty atrocious. It is. I don't even know how to. It's like Gears of War,
but Japanese.
Make it Japanese and strip out all the fun, and you've got Quantum Theory.
You know a game is good when it disappears from the public and the press's eye for at least 6 months.
Like, I played it at E3, and I was like, hey, this is kind of cool. And they must have showed, like, the only section of the game at E3 that had any redeeming value.
So, yeah, vertical slices can do that.
So, yeah, I'm going to trek through a little bit more, and I'll do a Beyond Co-op review of it, but about 3 hours in, and I'm pretty much, I've seen all I want to see.
Excellent.
And finally, I've been playing Comic Jumper, which comes out.
How is it?
It's pretty good. It is pretty ridiculous also. They break the... how's the saying go? Break the fourth
wall.
Yeah, the fourth wall. They did that a lot. Like, the game takes place with Twisted Pixel. Like Twisted Pixel is a character in the game itself.
I have heard that they are like in super attack or something that you can invoke.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's that. So yeah, you can call the super attack, and the developers literally like punch the screen for you. But Twisted Pixel is like the character in the game that helps Captain Smiley jump between comics and stuff, and Captain Smiley always like sucks up to them and asks them if they want coffee and donuts and stuff like that. So yeah,
that's awesome.
It's pretty ridiculous, and I think people are going to enjoy it. I've only gotten through. I did the Nanok comic, which is the Conan ripoff, and. So that's all I've done so far. The next one, I think, is the... I think it's the Silver Age one. I can't remember which one that one's called, but...
So. Isn't there an anime level in that, too?
Yeah, there's a black and white... Yeah. Yeah, there's a black and white manga level. There's the Silver Age level, and I think a classic style. So that's it.
Sweet. So I'm going to, at great risk to our flow, I'm going to jump to Jim and have him talk about what he's been playing.
Okay. I've been in Reach also, although not near as much as some of you guys. Nick, you got like, what, 40-some hours logged now?
I don't even know. I've lost track. I stopped checking. I don't want
to. I don't think I'm even
nerds.
To 10 or 11. Yeah. But I've been dabbling when I can late at night. I went back and went through all four of the Nazi Zombies map the other night. I finally finished the Lara Croft campaign, and I've been trying the Red Dead Redemption DLC.
How is that?
I haven't tried the horse races yet. The new gang hideouts. I have.
Uh-oh. I lost Jim now.
I lost Jim, too. But we'll assume he's having an excellent time with Red Dead, because that game is awesome. So...
Did you want me to continue?
No, it's okay.
Now we can hear you.
I'm going to drop you, Jim, and add you back in. Maybe that'll fix things.
Okay.
Okay. No! Oh, the dangers of a live podcast.
It's okay. That's what makes us special. That's why this is the live show.
Yeah, the live show that's going to be pre-recorded and broadcast out to our tens of users.
Got to give them something for their money.
Yeah, that's very true. It is entertaining, at least on this end. Hopefully it will be to people who expect a professional podcast from us, so if they do, I'm not really sure what they're listening to every week.
I'm still getting gaps.
You're still getting gaps? Well, finish up your Red Dead thoughts.
Okay. On Red Dead Redemption, I haven't got to try any of the horse races or the get-outs, but I've tried the Liar's Poker and the Explosive Rifle. And it's a lot of fun. I was surprised that you can't cheat in poker like I thought you'd be able to.
Don't you have to wear the spell to do that?
You
I lost him again. This is awesome.
You can actually pick outfits in the multiplayer. You just pick your character, so...
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
You pick John Marston, but Kat, you just get default John.
Okay. Kat, you've been playing games, right?
I have. This last weekend, I finally got to play a bunch of stuff again, which I've been holding off for a little while. But I ended up playing through the majority of Dead Rising 2, which has been a lot of fun, especially in co-op. I'm kind of surprised. It doesn't feel as gimped as I thought it would. So I've really been pleasantly surprised with that one. And
the psychopath fights are just as horrible as they were in the first game, though.
They're actually a lot harder. Well, maybe it's just because the last time I played through the first game, I was on level 50. But I've had to retry almost every psychopath at least 4 times before being able to beat them. But if you bring in a buddy, you can, like, flank and everything else, and it's kind of awesome.
I have an urgent update from Jim, who says, in our little chat room, I'm going to destroy my freaking computer and burn down all 4 of our houses in a fit of rage.
He got dropped from our call.
Yeah, so Jim is not going to be able to finish out the podcast with us, but he has contributed a glorious quote. let's see, so tell us more about Dead Rising.
It's just been great. I mean, like I said, you can use both players to beat almost all... Well, actually, all of the bosses that I've tried with co-op and everything else... So it just makes it a lot more fun when you bring in another person, especially when you dress like something ridiculous, because you get to keep your outfits when you join another person's game. Right. So I've been dressed in like little kids' pajamas and galoshes and stuff. It's awesome.
I actually have heard that the psychopath fights actually make the single player suck considerably if you decide to go after them.
It's really hard.
Side missions.
Yes.
And everybody I know that's reviewed it and been playing it says that the way to play those guys is to bring in a co-op player.
Absolutely.
You'll have to cheese the encounter to win, but it's easier to cheese it when there's two people.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of them, like, I've gotten them to glitch out. A couple of the bosses that I've played by myself, like, I'd hide in one of the little maintenance rooms and say the guy on the motorcycle's chasing me down and he gets stuck in the maintenance room, open the door, throw in a grenade or explosives, close the door. I would just do that back and forth. And yeah, otherwise the boss fights are pretty brutal as far as single player goes. So I definitely recommend that one co-op.
Yeah, I've always found that series is best played when you're not actually playing the game. It's fun to just run around the sandbox and beat the crap out of zombies and humiliate them in fun and interesting ways. But the story, like it takes, unless you really have a set path that you know what you want to do, you know, the fact that it uses the Breath of Fire Dragon Quarter method of save games where you can permanently screw yourself, but you can start over and keep everything.
Yeah.
It's always been really interesting and unique. But the problem is, you know, it's a sandbox type game, but then it saddles you with time limits, and those two styles really clash against each other for me. So while I enjoy the hell out of playing the game, I don't like playing the actual storyline, you know?
So, yeah, I like having the guidelines of the time limit. Otherwise, I would never get anything done. Like, I'd never finish the story. And the story is kind of fun. I don't know. I enjoy it.
I don't know.
And all the weird characters.
Sounds good,
and
but it looks like you've been some Atlas titles here.
I have. I've been playing 3D Dot Game Heroes on the PlayStation in between. Like, whenever I get a couple minutes, I'll just go through some of the dungeons, which is a pretty blatant Zelda The Link to the Past ripoff, which is awesome.
So does Zelda taste just as good now as it did in the 80s?
It does. It's pretty delicious. And it works really well, and there's so many extra characters. Like, I booted it up the other day and played as Sackboy. It's like, yes, Little Big Planet meets awesome Zelda-y stuff, and it's just kind of neat. And then Persona 3 Portable, I'm finally playing a Persona title, and I've been playing that one just kind of before bed, which has been really fun on my dreams.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good with that, because you can just do a day at a time, and it can either take 5 minutes or 5 hours, depending on what you're
doing. Exactly. Yep, it's perfect for, like, crashing out early or whatever.
Have you gotten to the point where it gets stupid and difficult for no reason yet?
No, I'm playing through the first time on easy because it was like, you need to play as the male character first to get the original experience. I'm like, but I want to play as the girl. So I'm playing through on easy as the male character first, so.
The female character actually is a side story. So
yeah,
most of the perspective you get from her is only insightful if you've played it already.
Right.
And her battle theme isn't as good as the male characters. Yeah.
Well,
I'm one of the few people that really enjoys the Persona soundtrack, and her song is nowhere near as good.
It's not Burn My Dread style? I don't know.
No,
we'll get to that eventually, I'm sure. At, like, 20 minutes a night, it'll probably take a while.
Well, Persona 3, a single playthrough is usually a 100-hour endeavor, so you're playing on easy, so it might, you know, lower to something like 60 or 70.
That's
a long game.
Yeah, that is a lot of hours. So I don't have to worry about buying any more PlayStation portable games for a while, I guess.
Well, the thing about it is you can actually play a meta game and see how many times you have to recharge your PSP to complete a Persona playthrough. You might actually wear the battery down.
Yeah, I like my PSP Go. It's got a pretty decent battery life.
Decent meaning it lasts about an extra hour.
It's still better than the PSP.
Well, you had the PSP 1000, didn't you, Kat? The original one? So yeah, that
it was like 2.5 hours, and it's already flashing the you need to charge this. It was sad.
That's pretty much every PSP I've used, and the only one I haven't used or owned is the 3000. Anyway, let's move on. I'm going to talk about what I've been playing. And I played Halo, and everyone else played Halo, so I'm not going to talk about that. I played the new Borderlands DLC, the new Robot Revolution, or Robolution as it is, and it's more Borderlands. I've seen a lot of people giving mixed reviews of it. I've seen some people that really like Borderlands saying, "Oh, it's more Borderlands. It's great," but it's funny, but it relies on two things that irritate the crap out of me. First of all, about a third of the content is actually a rehash of the Brains quests from the zombie DLC. So if you hated TK Baha for making TK. You get hundreds of brains, you are going to really hate the crazy bitch whose name I can't remember right now, because she makes you get something like 400 claptrap parts.
Oh my god!
Nice. But does she throw up your weapons?
What was that?
Does she throw up your weapons when you deliver those brains?
No, she actually just, you know, gives you another quest.
Lame.
It is
She's
lame.
Gonna be like TK. I like when he threw up stuff.
It's kind of a horrifying result, and I will admit that I actually laughed out loud at what happened when you finished them. But yeah, I didn't appreciate that. And the bulk of the content is you taking down Claptrap, and there's really only three story quests, and they're very quick if you can burn through them. And along the way, it actually recycles every single boss fight from the rest of Borderlands. So you'll fight General Knox two more times, you fight Zombie Dr. Ned again, and you fight one of the ninja chicks from the General Knox DLC twice. And then there's an incredibly cheesy, awesome, but cheesy boss fight at the end, to the point where, like, you know, I was almost 10 levels higher than the boss because the level balancing patch hasn't come out yet, and the boss could one-shot me. So I spent the last boss fight of that game hiding behind a rock, exploiting the fact that it couldn't see me and only popping out to hit it every now and then. The fight took like 20 minutes. I didn't take any damage, but I think I did it wrong. You know, it is really funny though. It's like, as far as the humor goes, it's probably the funniest of them. Like, some of the stuff the Claptraps say is hilarious. Like there's these loudspeakers where Claptrap is preaching propaganda, and one of the things he says is Andrew Ryan's speech from the beginning of BioShock.
Nice.
Completely turned around to talk about Claptraps. You know, no, says the treasure hunter, it belongs spilled on the ground type stuff. It's pretty fun, and as always, if you play with friends, it's great. But I definitely recommend, if you're interested, to wait until that balance patch comes out, because I logged in on a second playthrough character who is level 51, and the content was something like, I think it started at 40. And got to 45 at the end. So it was never really a challenge. And I played more Valkyria Chronicles 2, but I've talked about that enough. And I also played a little game called Minecraft, which is probably an entire separate podcast. But
I actually bought it. I just have not played it.
Yeah, you might want to, you know, get Civ out of the way before you develop a new addiction.
Like, okay, I played it, I ran around, and it was, like, snowing, and I was, like, trying to figure out what the hell to do. And I got a bunch of sticks and a couple flowers and some stuff, and then I was like, I gotta go eat dinner. And that was the last I played in Minecraft.
It's one of those things where its simplicity belies what lies beneath it. I'm sure you've all seen some of the crazy shit that people are building in that game.
Yeah.
And it's all, and it's all, like, you know, emergent gameplay, as much as I kind of hate that term. You know, you make your own fun in that game. It's like, I'm going to build a mine to the center of the earth. Oh my god, that someone put lava down here. Or, you know,
did you see the scale thing of the Starship Enterprise?
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. Like,
the best thing I've seen so far was probably the guy who made a working 16-bit
calculator
memory bank.
Yeah.
That could do calculations by exploiting stuff in Minecraft.
Yeah.
But I didn't play too much of it because I get addicted to Legos, and it's basically, you know, Legos on crack. You know, with...
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like Lego crack.
Yeah, it's really good. So let's move on to This Week in Co-op, because we have a lot of delays to talk about. But delays, I'd like to make fun of... I'm going to look this guy's name up. All right. Steven Terhide, a producer at Guerrilla Games, working on Killzone 3. And I'll just paraphrase and say that he came out and said that campaign co-op is a lot of work, which is a reason why they're not doing it right now.
Again.
Well, maybe.
Maybe not.
I mean, the best part of the quote is the rest of it, really. I mean, yeah, you know, co-op campaign is hard. Are you going to be able to play co-op campaign? Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah.
Who knows?
All right, look here, buddy. Campaign co-op is hard. You know what else is hard? Making a video game. That's not exactly... So why don't you, you know, stop talking about how hard it is and just fucking do it already.
That's no fun.
Your last
then we can't
game,
make fun of them.
Your last game had our hero with somebody at all times. There's no reason someone else couldn't control that character. Except your bullshit excuse that it's hard. I hate you.
Hey, we're going to have to put the explicit tag on this.
I know, I'm angry.
you are angry and swearing?
I know. But seriously, Killzone 2 was not that good. It was pretty, but it wasn't great. And co-op would have made it a lot better, especially in the stupid parts. You know, when I could sit there and make fun of how much of a dumbass Rico was instead of having the player avatar have to do the facepalm for me in the ending.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Poor stupid parts.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's move on to some extra stuff, like the fact that Gears of War 3 has been delayed until fall 2011. But at least it's for a good reason, and Microsoft is honest about it.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't give us the BS answer. They're like, we're moving it because we want to, and not like...
We're moving it because we got nothing coming next fall.
Yeah, basically.
And we need something big there.
We gotta fill that void.
You know, and Epic has, you know, like we said, Epic also has Bulletstorm coming out in the spring, so, you know, if Gears 3 came out within a few weeks of that, I know which one of those I'd buy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Bulletstorm looks fun, I really loved Painkiller, but that's probably something I'll wait till it's, you know, $20-$30 before I play. Now, let's see. I don't know why. Are we talking about the patch here?
Yeah, I thought it'd be good just to kind of talk about the upcoming DLC for Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
It's
got
zombies.
I thought it just came out.
It's got zombies. No, the Liars and Cheats pack just came out.
That's right. I don't know. I don't have Red Dead.
I'm
a sad, sad
20 hours into that game, and I've made almost no story progress.
See, that's why I need, like, the 3-day limit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's got new single player content called the Undead Nightmare Pack with zombies, zombie horses, zombie bears, zombie. Mountain lions?
I like zombie bears.
Somebody the best was somebody said something like the headline was like Red Dead Redemption has zombie cougars. Somebody came in and said this wasn't what you were expecting, was it? And it was like the picture of like the cougar there.
I would have.
Everyone thought something different.
I would have posted a picture of Courtney Cox or something. Just to yeah.
So that's coming out pretty soon.
Yeah, just in time for Halloween.
Yeah, I think.
Yay!
So, but like I said, I think it's single player focused, but I'm sure it'll add some multiplayer stuff. So.
Yeah. But let's talk about happy things, like Randy Pitchford and Gearbox being really awesome and loving co-op. He gave an interview to Major Nelson on his podcast, and he talked a lot about co-op, and we have a bunch of quotes pulled from it. And let's see. The first one is, "We can't quit you, Borderlands." You know, and judging from the amount of time I've put into that game, neither can I. And most of our community will probably agree. Let's see. He also says, "Being able to have a shared experience with friends is important." God, this could be on the inside of one of those Dove chocolates with little promises to yourself. It's heartwarming. And he says, "Co-op is a huge part of Gearbox's identity." And I think I'd agree. And he credits this console generation's achievement system with enabling developers a method of tracking co-op gaming experiences. Seems a little interesting to me. He says, "It's been difficult in the past to quantify the value of what co-op adds to your game. It was difficult to measure just how many people are buying this to play co-op or not. However, it's getting easier. The achievement system helps. When you get achievements that require co-op, we can measure how many have earned that relative to the whole. And we're learning that it's getting more and more important. We know it's important to us, so that drove a lot of our influence." See, you know, if I wasn't married, I think I'd fall in love with this man.
Well, I already am in love with Randy Pitchford.
Me too.
I am in love with Randy Pitchford's enthusiasm for gaming.
Yeah.
I'm excited to play... We have, like, a couple weeks till Fable 3 comes out, right?
What does that have to do with Randy Pitchford?
Oh, yeah, the Borderlands guy. I was thinking the other guy.
Yeah, we like Peter
Molyneux
too.
That one needs co-op too.
But, you know, his quotes are usually mocked in the end.
Oh,
he did at one point say that the original Fable was going to be the greatest role-playing game of all time. And,
yeah,
well, I enjoyed
that.
The crap out of that game. That couldn't have been further from the truth.
But I digress.
So anyway, I think his point, though, about the achievements and how it's actually given measurable data for these developers to work with is really awesome. Like,
yeah,
it's like people are always like, we hear, "Oh, well, we don't really know if it's worth it." And it's like, well, here's a way you can measure if it's actually worth it. And here's a case where, you know, they've proved that co-op is, you know, becoming more popular. People are using that.
Yeah, I guess I took an issue with him crediting the achievement system in general, because really, you know, you look at what Bungie pulls out of their games. You know, you don't need the achievements to pull all that data. You just need a stat tracking system that dials home.
Yeah.
You can see how much co-op someone's playing.
Yeah.
As long as you set the right flags. But
if you weren't playing online, I mean...
Well, then
like,
if you're not playing online, they're not going to see your achievements, so that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They would see it when you plug it in. Most people do. I mean, my sister and her roommate had an Xbox, and they had it unplugged when they were there. But when they'd come back, they'd plug it in so all their data would update.
But that data is probably not as valuable as someone playing online all the time.
But playing local co-op, because they played a lot of arcade games. They'd come back to my house to buy a bunch of arcade games, especially platformers, like crazy. And
yeah, but to a developer, he wants the data now, not in 2 weeks. You know, if you plug in your Xbox once every few months to download something, because, you know, your, you know, location or, you know, the proximity of your gaming setup to the cable modem and router, you know, if I want to track how many people are playing my game, I'm going to look at live data. But yeah, let's get off this. But we do love Randy Pitchford. And, Nintendo has revealed the launch date window, at least for us, and the pricing of the 3DS. And it is going to cost 25,000 Japanese yen. And if you are a fool and run it through the direct conversion rate, you'll say it's $300. But if you look historically at Nintendo and what they put their price points at, they generally translate at 100 yen as a dollar, so you can count on this sucker being 250 bones when it comes out, and I will eat my shoe if it's any higher.
Gross.
But no, if you look at their past releases, it's almost always been 100 yen to per dollar, and the U.S. price for these always skews lower, even if the conversion is higher. So yeah.
I mean, that's like that all around. Like if you look at like the European prices for like stuff, like if you look at like the
Xbox 360, just jacked anyway.
Right, but you look at like the Xbox 360, it's $199 for the arcade here, and it might be £199 in the UK, but we all know the conversion of that is not 1-to-1, it's like 1-to-1.6 or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
especially in like Australia where they're really screwed.
Well, yeah, Australia has like ridiculous taxes and levies on their crap, which is a big part of it.
And extreme censorship and broken censorship in that they don't have a rating for anything higher than, you know, R teen.
But they have kangaroos.
They do. and koala bears. But cool. you know what they don't have?
What's that?
Is a Japanese release date of February 26th, 2011.
Yeah.
Which is when the 3DS will come out.
So some of the more interesting things, though, with that were it talked about the OS on it. It sounds like it's going to have like a dashboard kind of thing, like the DSi, a little bit more in tune. I guess it's going to be a little more always connected to the Nintendo Wi-Fi, whatever you want to call it.
Well, it's going to take the tag mode that things like Dragon Quest and Nintendogs used on the DS and keep it on at all times as long as the system has power.
Right. Well, I mean, above and beyond the initial connection. And that thing looks pretty interesting. They were showing it. I don't know if you got a chance to see the Street Fighter 4 video that uses the tag mode. And basically what it would do is, like, if, you know, you had your DS or your 3DS in sleep with Street Fighter 4 in it, and you pass by somebody that had the 3DS in sleep mode, like, your guys would, like, do a virtual fight, and whoever won would earn some sort of credits or whatever towards something else.
So, is pretty cool. That's going to be hella fun at PAX.
Yeah. So, I mean, places like that, you know, people that commute on, like, subways and stuff like that, and, you know, it's really useful. I think the majority of the U.S., though, you know, stuff like that's not that big of a deal.
Well, it's because handhelds here are still traditionally, you know, the domain of kids, and we're not in elementary school anymore.
Yeah.
So we're not going to be around groups of people unless we're at something like PAX.
Yeah.
I mean, a few people I know, you know, did an experiment and put their DSs in tag mode for like an entire day and rolled through their public transit systems and didn't get a single hit on anything. And in Japan, that's basically how you do it. But the big thing for me, actually, was that there's going to be some sort of virtual console for existing Game Boy and Game Boy Advance titles.
You know,
because I wanted this. This is what I wanted on the DSi.
I don't know. My problem with it is Nintendo's pricing is way too expensive for their stuff.
Yeah.
It is just for, and especially you're looking at those Game Boy Advance games and Game Boy games or whatever else they're gonna put. You know they're gonna charge like $5 or $6 for them. It's, I don't know.
You know if they take the Final Fantasy 4, 5, and 6 ports, I would probably buy those just so I could have all three of those on the go at all times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been rebuying a lot of stuff on my PSP Go just because I can store it. In my PSP, it's like, oh, I feel like playing Final Fantasy VIII right now, so I'm going to play a PS1 game.
Yeah.
But those are priced pretty fair. I think they're, what, $10, the PS1 titles?
Six to ten.
Yeah.
Oh, everyone I've gotten has been $10 on sale.
Because you're only buying the top shelf stuff. Most of the, like, things like Jumping Flash will be $6. Although, Jumping Flash is awesome.
They need to release Legend of Mana. That's what they need to do.
No, they don't. That game was an abortion.
I love that game. That was my favorite PS1 game. Huh.
Well, playing all of the series before that made me hate it, so.
I don't know. They're all different, and that doesn't bother me. But yeah, the 3DS, which is kind of funny because I've been so anti-3D, I actually want a 3DS. It's sad.
I want it to do well because I'm a proponent of 3D if I don't have to wear stupid glasses.
Now, I'm curious, Kat, because you said you've tried some 3D stuff with the glasses and it just doesn't work for you. Now, I'm curious
Yeah, I have no idea. I'll have to go into a GameStop and stand there for 20 minutes trying to play it to see if I can actually see in 3D. Because with the glasses, I can't. I have to close one eye to be able to even see the screen.
When you know those lenticular 3D things, like
the active shutter, or actually
like the cards that have
lenticular.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Can you see those?
I think it's basically like that. I think that's kind of how it works. So you're probably good.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious, and I saw a demo for some game. I can't even remember what it was. I feel like it was the Assassin's Creed game that's coming out on it. But it just looked so pretty. I'm not even a big HD kind of person, but the 3DS kind of impressed me, and I'm a little bit sad about that.
Well, there's some big titles. I mean, there's a Metal Gear Solid game they already announced. There's the Resident Evil game, which is going to have co-op. Street Fighter 4, you know, there's a ton of first-party titles already announced. They got a lot of developer support behind it already, so...
Yeah, hopefully it does well then, even if I can't see it.
Yeah, I'm sure it will do well. It's a Nintendo handheld.
It prints money!
It does print money. Let's see, let's speed through the rest of the news, because really... Two Worlds 2 has been delayed till January, and it's going to have good company because so has Little Big Planet 2.
There's a bunch of stuff that's been delayed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like that stuff has been delayed. I mean...
But when everything gets delayed to the same thing, it's like...
It's like you're deferring my wallet pain from November to January.
Yeah.
That's fine by me. I mean...
I just saw DC Universe Online got delayed.
Yeah.
Today. Like... It just seems like every day there's a new announcement of another game getting delayed to...
You know why there's so many... It's because the PR cycle pushes announcements of games out so damned early.
Yeah.
And remember back in the Nintendo days when we would hear about a game, like, you know, after it was on store shelves?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I understand why they got to get the hype train rolling real early, because they want to kind of, you know, see what a game's going to do early enough for investors, and then tweak things up and change things. But, like, I would love it if, you know, 3 months before is when they, like, really announce something. And you know, it's like movie previews and stuff. You very rarely see a preview for a movie that's, unless it's, like, coming out within three to 6 months. All right, there might be a teaser trailer where it's you're not really getting anything, but, you know, some kind of concept thing or something. But, and even that, it's never more than like a year. If that, you might see something in the fall for summer blockbuster or something like that.
Yeah, so. But as like a new media, it kind of makes sense for games to want investors interested early. But at the same time, setting a date early on at all is silly. I mean, having deadlines, sure, that makes sense, but you should always tweak them. Like, I follow the Cliffy B on Twitter, and one of his most recent quotes that I absolutely love is, he says, "Remember, a delayed game is only late until it ships. A bad game is shit forever." So that kind of makes sense, and it applies to all these games that are getting delayed. I'd rather have a game 6 months late than have a piece of garbage like, what was it, Damnation? That game that was an awful game.
That game was an Unreal mod, though. I mean, come on.
It had so much potential, though. It was such a cool concept and had really neat characters. It was just broken. Like, broken, period. I couldn't even finish the game because they glitched me out so bad.
But what's interesting is, like, so, like, Two Worlds 2, you know, they... We've previewed it a couple of times when we said, yeah, this game needs more time in the oven. And
right.
When the delay came, that was what South Peak claimed, yet the European release is still on track for this fall. And then the people that are publishing it over in Europe, or actually I think it would be one of the developers from Europe, is like, the game's done, and we did extensive bug testing, and it's fine, and it's ready to release. South Peak's just holding it up because they don't want to release it this fall.
Huh.
So it's like,
idea.
So now you're, it's a case of like, okay, what's really going on?
I have some theories.
Aliens.
No, it's one of those situations where South Peak is a really small publisher, and a game like that, you know, it's not gonna beat out fall games. So they're trying to move it out of the way of everything. Yeah. And it's as simple as that. It's probably not going to sell that well in the first place, let's be honest. It might be a great game, but, you know, in the wake of everything releasing this fall, you know, no one's going to pick that up. And last up, you know, we expressed concern over it, but last episode, but the good old games closure was indeed a marketing ploy. And we're all angry and indignant about it, but they just dropped Planescape Torment on us, and I don't care anymore, because that is the best RPG of all time, Mr. Molyneux.
I might need to pick it up, because I have never played it, but I've heard multiple people say that. So
it is, like, I'll caveat that and say Western RPG, because it's not my favorite RPG of all time, but when I, like, if I had to pick one game that I would hold up as, like, awesome storytelling and great writing and great setting and just generally excellent storytelling, that would be the one I'd pick. It is so damn good. And, well, you want to talk about the future of co-op?
Sure. Let's talk about it. You want me to?
You can intro it. That's perfectly fine.
So there's a pretty excellent editorial on IGN called "The Future of Co-op Gaming" by Mr. Michael Thompson. I'm sorry, I can't read. And he kind of goes through some of the more popular co-op games in recent day, like Gears of War 2, Crackdown 2, Borderlands. Use some anecdotal evidence of, you know, people basically, like, Borderlands is the one example, how people will only play that game in co-op. They'll, you know, they won't progress their story. They'll wait for their co-op partners to play. You know, they'll have different characters to play with different groups of people and stuff like that. And, you know, that style of play is getting more and more popular. What makes this article really interesting is there's actually a Harvard research study embedded in it, talking about you know, how they study the different influences on behavior of people who play cooperative games. And the one experiment, it says, I'll just read out, it says, one experiment, each player gets $10, there's four people. Players must decide how the money is going to be used, if they're going to keep it for themselves or if they're going to use it for the group project. The money contributed to the group project is doubled and split equally among all the players, but there's no guarantee that the others will contribute. So the idea is, if everyone contributes fully $40 into the project, it gets there's $80 total split four ways. So everybody gets $20.
Mm-hmm.
But think about how the game looks from any particular point of view. Each dollar you put in gets doubled to $2, then split four ways. You only get 50 cents. So you don't know beforehand if that you're going to get that extra money back, right?
Right.
So it's kind of an interesting concept. I invite people to read the article to find out the payoff. But the end result is most people actually lean towards the co-op result. You know, they did work cooperatively to maximize the output. And that's kind of the general consensus. And the article goes on to talk about Portal 2 and how that kind of evolved. And basically in Portal 2, like, there's no way you can move forward unless you work together. Like, there's literally, you have to work together to solve the puzzles. And while traditionally, like, co-op games have been about, like, violence and stuff like that, Valve is kind of banking on thinking, you know, we'll start to see people working together to solve stuff without violence. Obviously, Portal's not really a violent game, and it's a puzzle game, but it's, you know, it's a different kind. And the quote from Valve is pretty interesting. It says, "The Portal 2 experience is much closer to dancing together than fighting together."
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool if you think about it. So,
it is, and I think I'm actually going to have to hand the reins over to you, Nick, because as everyone can probably hear, my daughter is making a bunch of noise. So, okay. I'm going to say goodbye for now, and I'll see if I can hop back in before the podcast ends. But bake them away, toys.
All right. The live podcast continues.
Hey, and I haven't crashed anything yet. That's amazing.
That is awesome. did you get a chance to read the article, Kat, by any?
I looked through a couple of the quotes right before we jumped in here, and I really liked the experiment. I mean, just putting people together and having them come up with the co-op outcome or whatever it is. The experiment, you'll actually have to read it to make sense of it, but it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and the article goes on and talks about different kinds of co-op and ways it forces co-op amongst players. And they talked about Kane and Lynch 2, actually, and said how like the co-op in it there is actually it talks about the Fragile Alliance mode, which basically it's co-op, but at any time a player can turn on another player and make it competitive. And I know at the time that I've played that mode, very rarely did anybody decide to turn on the entire group and try and take the money and run. Basically, people just worked together and played through it.
Right. I don't know. And the Portal thing is interesting, too, because, I mean, if you look at co-op games, a vast majority of them are shooters, for the most part. I mean, there are a lot of shooters that are really high-end co-op games. So to see it kind of passive with all the puzzles and the working together in a more logic sense as opposed to violent sense, it's kind of really interesting. I don't know. It was a really interesting article, and I'm going to finish it up as soon as we're done here.
Yeah, it's a pretty meaty thing, and like I said, there's a lot of quotes. A lot of it's from Valve, and actually Valve goes back and talks about one of their... It's a team-based shooter, but Counter-Strike... And talks a bit about the co-op in that. I mean, team-based stuff, it essentially is co-op, but against, you know, other players. But when you take that out, just kind of seeing if I missed anything here.
Well, it kind of makes it so that everybody kind of wins, because when you're playing against other people, somebody always loses, whoever it is, even if you're not talking to them or whatever.
Yeah,
it's just not as satisfying to me, I guess.
I know for me, like the thing I like most about co-op is it's like, and this probably, you know, transitions from single player game. It's like you're playing a game and you're trying to do something and the game beats you, right? to put it simply, the game beats you at something, and you
right.
So you dig your feet into the sand and you go back and try it again and it beats you again, and eventually you overcome whatever that obstacle was. And in co-op, when that kind of scenario comes up, it's just so much more satisfying, because then you're like, you're talking with that other player or players, and you're like, okay, well, we can try doing it this way, and they might have a different idea, and you start combining ideas on how you can beat it. And it's just, when you do finally overcome that, whatever that obstacle is, it's just that much more gratifying of an experience.
Yeah, and Dead Rising 2 is a really good example of that, because of how difficult the psychos are in this one. It's just so hard on some of them. It's impossible to do by... Well, maybe not impossible, but it's really difficult to do on your own. And it's a lot more fun to have someone come in and figure out that you can run away or go around a different area and trap them or whatever. I mean, it's just a lot of working together to make sure that you get the best experience, and you do it as fast as possible because you are on a time limit, and you get to beat a lot more of the psychos before you go on and everything else, and it just works really well.
Yeah, and so that kind of goes into what the final quote in this, and this is by Valve's Chet Falizek. You know, he was asked what the biggest flaw is in any cooperative game, and he said, when players don't need each other, when everyone can just run around together, but they don't need each other. While designing systems where players have to depend on each other can be scary, the payoff for when it's done right is one of the highest highs in gaming. And I think that's kind of what we were just talking about, is, you know, when the systems all come together and work, and players are kind of funneled together and have to work together to complete something, it is a high. And I think that's a good comparison.
Yep. So co-op is on the up and up, would you say?
I would think so. So, you know, we've been doing this podcast for 2 years, and the site's been around almost 3 years, and every year we've been getting surprised with more and more co-op stuff, different games, different types of games adding it, whether sports games, RPGs, you know. Obviously, like we said, shooters have been probably the biggest genre of it. But there's also lots of little interesting niche kind of titles that are finding different ways to insert co-op into it.
Yep, and unlike my mix-up earlier, I'm actually excited for Fable 3, and they're hopefully getting co-op right this time. I guess we will find out if they've, I don't know, figured it out as far as the RPG stuff goes that's not quite as Borderlands of an RPG. So hopefully it works out. I like other types of games. We need a lot more action games to be co-op, but like dependent co-op, not co-op where you can split up and play together, but not really.
I'd like to see more story-based co-op games, like something like Uncharted.
Yeah.
You know, I understand it'd be very difficult because either programming an AI to be with you for the single-player piece of it, you know, it would probably take something away from that experience, but to do it in co-op too could be really rewarding. I mean, so like you have your Army of Two, which is like the kind of brunt action version of that. But if you can throw in some story, add in some Tomb Raider style puzzle mechanics, like the top down version of it's doing, you know, but make it a really strong narrative and stuff where each player is a specific character and. I don't know. I really look forward to the day that somebody decides to try that. You look at a game that came out today, Enslaved.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that.
It's been getting really good reviews. But the whole game is basically you and another character going through this whole thing, but the other character you never have control over. It's kind of like a Prince of Persia thing with Elika from that version of Prince of Persia. You know, but she helps you out a little bit here and there. But for the most part, you just play this one guy, Monkey. And everyone says, like, the driving force of the game is the narrative, the dialogue between the characters and stuff. And I don't know, it'd be cool if you could, each character was a player and...
Just experience that much more story together, too. Because, I mean, I know in, like, high school and... I guess even beyond that, now, the most we ever talk about games between my friends and I is the story and, like, when whatever happens to this character, and that's the best bonding time, I think. And we usually took that from single-player games, but if you can get that in co-op, then you have that much more to connect over as far as games go, and I think that would be a lot more interesting anyway.
Yeah.
I mean... Obviously, I'm not a developer, so I have no idea how stuff like that works, but I would like to see more of it as far
as...
You're
not a developer, but you're a gamer, so...
I am. That's what I want. I am the whatever. yeah, I think my brain is falling asleep now.
we'll cover that full editorial on the site, definitely give it a read. It's called The Future of Co-op Gaming up at IGN.com. It's good to see lots of mainstream exposure here. And yes, we talked about earlier, co-op is hard, but it's worth it, as Randy Pitchford kind of followed up with that and improved. So, all right, let's wrap it up. This live podcast has taken some interesting twists and turns for us, but what the hell? Try to do something different tonight. And we'll see. So let's look at some upcoming co-op releases. There's a few, and I didn't write them down, so I'll have to go to the old method of looking on the actual site. And if you didn't know, people, there is a co-op release calendar on the site under the games menu. So look at it. What do we got? So we got Def Jam Rap Stars coming out probably by the time you read or listen to this. It's PS3, 360, and the Wii. I'm actually looking forward to that when I get my rap on. a G thing. Probably my favorite old school rap song of all time. So we'll see how that goes. A few drinks down the pipe and I'll be good to go. Final Fantasy, The Four Heroes of Light hit the DS today. I've heard some decent things about it. We've been following that for a while, so we'll see how that turns out. And I don't know if this one's actually coming out, because we haven't heard anything, but Rock of the Dead was supposed to be out October 5th on the 360 and PlayStation 3. So we'll see what happens there. That was the Guitar Hero meets Typing of the Dead kind of game, which I'm really looking forward to.
It looked interesting, but I don't really play rhythm games, so sorry, Rock of the Dead.
And the only other one we had is Lost Planet 2. The PC release is out on the 15th, and that's the version that adds the 3D support. So, Kat, you won't be playing that. Not only because it's on the PC, but because it's in 3D.
Double whammy.
Yep, double whammy. Some site stuff. We only had a few reviews. Alien Breed 2, which is, I think it's called Assault. Sam checked that game out and said it's a little bit better than the first one, but still might not be your cup of tea. And Mark reviewed Batman the Brave and the Bold on the Wii. Kat is working on our Dead Rising 2 review as we speak, and probably should be up tonight, so by the time you hear this, you can check that out.
Yep, it'll be up. I'm on time.
What else? We had some features. We posted our new co-op community voice for the month of October, and it's about scares. That is the games that scare us, or moments in games that scare us, and stuff like that. So head on over. You know, we have a nice blog section, which is totally underutilized, and people need to go there and write some stuff.
Mostly just because I want to read it.
Mark posted a Co-op Classics video feature where he posted a video of Fire Truck and Vendetta. If you want some entertainment, watch the video of Fire Truck. It is hilarious. I don't know if did you happen to watch that, Kat?
I did not. I have not heard of either of those games, so I kind of
so Fire Truck is an old arcade game where like one person is the driver of the fire truck and the other person is the driver of the back end of the fire truck. Right? So I mean, really basic, we're talking like, I think when Mark covered it, it was like 1981 it came out. So it's black and white line art, real simple. So him and his I think his son's 9 or 10, they decided to play it, and it is funny to watch as it crashes into walls repeatedly over and over again. we had it on the download, and you talked about preliminary DLC. A good example of that was the Dead Rising 2 Case Zero, and how it's kind of like a super demo.
Right? Kind of. Well, and it was also a prequel to the full game, and you got to keep all of your levels and experience and money that you had gained through the little prequel section where you run through a town. You're basically playing as Chuck Green, and his daughter has just been bitten, and she needs Zombrex to stop from turning into a zombie. And there's only one boss battle and like 10 survivors, I think. But you can 100% it if you play through it, I don't know, once or twice to get a full rhythm of what to do in what order. But it was a really neat idea. It gave you a solid taste of the game, Dead Rising 2, and the combo element, which is the new thing for the game that people were thinking would be awesome but weren't really sure. And then once you combine a chainsaw and kayak paddles, then that sealed the deal, is what it comes down to, at least for me. I mean, I love the build mechanic. Some of the combinations are ridiculous. I love it.
I like the Freedom Bear. I saw the
I used the Freedom Bear to beat one of the bosses because I didn't have a co-op buddy at like, I don't know, 11 o'clock at night when everybody else was in bed on the East Coast, because you guys are mean.
Well, I'm sorry. We go to bed at 11 o'clock your time, which is
1 a.m. your time.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, but the Freedom Bear was helpful because you just prop him up in the corner and he uses the machine gun all by himself. It's just a teddy bear, so it doesn't matter if it gets destroyed. It doesn't. It's not a survivor or anything.
Yeah. All right. So now we got to talk about some serious. We got to talk about T-shirts.
Not T-shirts.
Yes, people have to buy some T-shirts, and since And since we want you to buy t-shirts, we have a coupon now. But our coupon's good not only for our t-shirts, but for any of the t-shirts on splitreason.com. So you get 10% off your entire purchase. And all you got to do is go there and enter the coupon code COOP10. How about that? We got our own coupon code.
I may buy some more shirts.
And, you know, if you do buy our shirts, like we've always said, it's like Mike and Nick gently caressing your nipples all day long. Kat, will you gently caress their nipples if they buy our shirts?
I suppose. So I like that your shirts gently caress my nipples is what it is.
Exactly. So this podcast is definitely getting the explicit tag, that's all I can say. But, yeah. What else have we got? Leave some feedback on iTunes if you're listening to us on there. Like I said, this is our 2-year anniversary show. That's why we kind of tried to do a little live thing, something a little different. 52 episodes plus, I don't know, 4 or 5 bonus ones from various conferences and things like that. So it's been a fun ride. We'll keep on going, try and maybe do some different things. I don't know. But leave us feedback. Let us know what you want us to do. You can always email staff@cooptimist.com or tips@cooptimist.com and let us know.
We read most of those. I mean, all of those.
I do. You know, I try and personally respond to pretty much everything that comes into our mailboxes. So if, you know, whatever it is, we care. Cooptimist cares.
Yep.
And finally, you can follow us on Twitter. We are Cooptimist without the dash. And I think that is it for episode 52. Kat, you survived the entire episode.
Without any technical malfunctions. That's amazing.
How about that crap? Right? Mike, he's done. Baby in the way. Jim, he barely lasted 15 minutes before his computer decided to crap out. But you?
I'm a trooper.
You are. Now something's going to catch fire as soon as we sign off.
No, don't say that.
All right, so this has been Co-op the Cast episode 52 for Monday, October the 4th. Thanks for listening.
Laters.
All right.
Poor Jim.